Hey, hey, welcome in. This is the very first episode of Filibuster, the Black and Red United podcast. I'm your host and producer, Adam Taylor. With me at my very own dining room table is Jason Anderson.
Hello, everybody. No monocle this time.
On the line, we have Black and Red United founder, Martin Schatzer.
What's up, guys?
We also have the Black and Red United rumor monger extraordinaire, Ben Bromley.
Hey, everybody. How's it going?
All right. So, guys, we're hosting a podcast. This is actually happening. I'm watching the lines record on the computer. So this is real.
This is really happening. I'm not dreaming it or hallucinating. It's not alcohol induced.
No, not yet. It's still too early in the show for that.
Right. It'll get there.
So, Martin, when you started the blog a little while back, we're entering the third year of Black and Red United. Did you picture a podcast happening?
Oh, my God. No. I pictured myself getting burnt out within a couple months and, then just the blog probably disappearing. But, no, it's been a great run. I'm happy to have you guys on board. And it's been a lot of fun and, you know, happy to share information and share conversations with other United fans. And, how'd we get to this point?
And Ben, you're the newest member here of the team, so welcome not only to the podcast, where you are now a founding co-host, but welcome to the site. Excited to have you here for your first season on board.
Well, thank you very much. I'm excited to be here as well. I've enjoyed the work that you guys have done, and I'm happy to be a part of it.
All right. So now the most important part of the show, which is a little segment we're calling What Are You Drinking? It's something Martin started on the blog for Game Threads. Jason, what are you drinking?
Well, everyone knows that I'm a huge fan of the state of Maryland.
No, I never got that.
I believe if you cut me, I would bleed the four colors of the Maryland flag. So I went with a Flying Dog Gonzo Imperial Porter. It's black, like United, but it's also from Maryland, which means I'm allowed to drink it.
Martin, you have something interesting on tap, I believe.
Yeah, I've got, it's another Maryland home brew, actually. It's something my brother-in-law and I did together. It's a Oktoberfest, so it's kind of late for the season, but it was brewed right here in Charles County, Maryland.
Hey, all right.
Excellent. Delicious, and we certainly encourage anyone listening, unless you're listening in your car, then if you're listening, you should also grab a drink.
Absolutely.
That's a good point.
And if you're really hardy, you might grab what Ben is drinking.
Yes, I've actually decided to class it up for the first episode. I have a Van Winkle Special Reserve Lot B, which only less than 800 produced for the whole state of Virginia this year.
Ben does not mess around.
No. I'm intensely jealous right now.
Yeah.
Even though it's from Virginia, I'm so jealous in my heart.
Yeah, I've spent this winter doing what I call the winter of rye, where I just drank lots and lots of rye whiskey, generally in Manhattan form. With spring coming up, though, starting to transition back from the dark liquors into the clear liquors, but I wanted one more hit of rye. So I found at the store today, I found some Sierra Nevada Ruthless Rye IPA. So IPA, great beer for the spring, and rye, so it fits just perfectly.
Yeah,
I guess I was a
delicious
little bit
too.
Worried that I was a little bit worried that after all that you were going to say Bud Light or something, but
I did see the newly released Bud Light Platinum at the store and thought about it ironically for about a tenth of a second, and then moved on to the real beer.
Yeah.
All right, let's get on with it. It's been quite an eventful offseason for DC United. I know some of our readers were worried early on because United got off to a bit of a plodding start.
Yeah.
One move, really, before things got preseason started approaching.
That was like the first move for everyone.
Yeah.
We were like the first team. We were out ahead of everyone, and then it just stopped.
Yeah, we took that first step and then stopped and looked around for a while and then made more moves than just about anybody in the last month.
Yeah.
So we're going to go with this thematically rather than chronologically. I think the number one story for the offseason has been filling roster holes for United. we wanted a target forward. We went out and got Hamdi Salehi, whose strike rate is unbelievable, really. We went out and got a right back in Robbie Russell, allowing us to move Perry Kitchen into defensive midfield. Jason, some thoughts?
I'm really happy with both of those moves. Russell, I always admired at RSL because you could tell he really got how their system worked. And he knew that his job in that system is actually deceptively very important, because if he doesn't come forward, Andy Williams can't come inside. And then if that doesn't happen, Williams is out on the wing. He's ineffective. You might as well be playing with 10. And yeah. So bringing someone like that in for us is very important. Now we have that attacking fullback that we never used to have.
Yeah,
he might not fly up the wing, but he's going to contribute to the attack, which is the most important thing.
Absolutely, and we'll talk more about that in the second segment, I'm sure. Martin, on a scale of 1 to 80 bazillion, how big is your man crush on Hamdi Salehi at this point?
Oh, I was hoping you'd ask me about him. Yeah, no, I think he's incredible. His strike rate is just nothing that I've seen before. I mean, he scores something like, is it 18 goals per game? Am I reading that right? I don't know. But I think his relationship with Branko Boskovic is going to be a big asset for the club. They've already worked together. You know, Boskovic needs someone to be a target in the box, and that's exactly what Salehi's going to provide. So I think he's been the kind of player that we've been missing the past couple of years, and hopefully we'll see some results.
Yeah, I mean, definitely we've been missing that big aerial threat in the box and that poacher since Luciano Emilio version one. So next up we have depth. Adding depth at every position has been just a mantra from the front office, and especially from Benny Olsen.
Yeah.
All off season, we went out and drafted a left wing. We pulled in a right wing whose ankle is thankfully not broken.
Yeah.
And we added depth at center back. Ben, what do you think the biggest move for a non-starter was this offseason?
I'm probably going to go with bringing in Danny Cruz. I think that obviously Andy Nahar is going to be gone for the Olympics when that comes around. And I think both as a replacement for Andy Nahar when he's gone and both as a late-game replacement, he's got speed, he's got steel. He'll really be able to help lock down wing players near the end of the game. So I think Danny Cruz is the most important, and in particular, his tough ankles are the most important non-starter addition to United this offseason.
Absolutely. His ankles have they're not Ben Olsen's ankles, that's for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not sure how he came through that without this being worse.
I mean,
the video is fuzzy and it was on the far side, but that looked really bad.
Yeah,
I was really like, oh, no.
Another big move is drafting Nick DeLeon out of Louisville for that left side, giving us some depth for Chris Pontius, who really has yet to play a full season without some kind of injury woe. Hopefully he can pull a Robin Van Persie and finally get a full season and score more goals than anyone ever. And that would be fantastic. Speaking of health, though, another big story is we are finally healthy, kind of front to back in a way we haven't been at this team in a long time. Chris Pontius was having a season to remember last year and a game to remember against Chivas USA before he went into an ill-advised tackle and broke his leg. He's back healthy. Branko Boskovic is back healthy. Dejan Jakovic is healthy, although he might not be starting on day one. Martin, is health going to be an issue for DC United this year?
Well, it always seems to be. But, you know, we do have more depth than we've ever had before. We have added Emiliano Dudar to the back. So, you know, whether it's him or Jakovic or McDonald or even Ethan White, you know, we've never had that crop of central defenders. So, you know, there's going to be competition back there. And whoever's the best is going to be starting. And whoever's not injured will be starting. And so, you know, we're used to seeing in the past United picking up some, you know, 48-year-old retired defender like Kerry Talley, or, you know, finding someone from Argentina who might have been a buddy of Jaime Mourinho at some point. And I don't think that's going to happen this year. I think we've got a good collection of players. And if one player goes down, you know, that hurts. That hurts any team. But I think we're going to be able to compensate for that. It's quite a change from what we've seen the past couple of years.
It definitely is. And another change this year is Branko Boskovic coming into camp healthy and fit.
Yeah.
Actually in shape. And Jason, you watched that game where he got hurt last year.
Right.
Tell our listeners who might not remember as well exactly how brilliant he was in that game.
The first half wasn't so good, but that's because every single player for us was terrible. And it was the Revs' backup players, and we still looked like an amateur team. But in the second half, it seemed like the wheels turned, something clicked into place, and he took that game over a lot in a similar way that Di Rosario looked down the stretch last season. Like, every time the ball came to him, you had to... It's like you could almost feel the crowd like lean forward a little bit, looking for what is he going to do. And first he was picking people out with passes. That wasn't really working because everyone else was still playing pretty poorly. And he realized that and he was like, oh, hey, I've got to win this game. And he hit the post on a free kick. He scored from long range. I believe the other goal was also from long range. It was incredible. I thought he was going to beat the New England Revolution single-handedly, until Alan Koger decided to take out his legs, and that was pretty much it. And when you see him came down, or the way he came down, it was just such an awkward landing, and he didn't know that the tackle was coming through, and the landing was such that you're like, this is bad right now.
Well, he's back, and yeah. And hopefully he and Dwayne DeRosario will be able to form a famous partnership in that area between the lines, where they both like to roam a little bit. Boskovic a little deeper coming from midfield, and Dero presumably coming from the forward line, unless United does a strange 4-1-4-1 thing this year.
I wouldn't go for that.
Which probably won't work. Anyway, speaking of Dero, he's back. He's the MVP. He's the Golden Boot winner. And now he's got a fat new contract. Biggest on the team. He's happy. Ben, is a happy Dwayne DeRosario a dangerous Dwayne DeRosario?
I think it can't be any other way. I mean, you look at his past few situations when he was at Toronto FC, when he was at the New York Red Bulls, he was never fully happy, he was never fully comfortable, and he was never, for New York, he was never the biggest fish in that pond. And I think all of those things combined, we're going to see another historic season from Dero. He might not score as many goals as he did last year because of Hamdi Salehi, but I think with the addition of Salehi, he's going to score still plenty of goals, and his assists might even go higher than they were last year.
Yeah, there was a real fear for United fans that contract, if it wasn't resolved, it was going to hang over his head and could sabotage the season, but it's great credit to United that they were able to get it done.
Yeah, it's about time somebody paid him. And I know one of the things that slowed talks down and held things up was that the league took the lead on it.
Yeah.
And the league is not really known for taking care of its star talent. It never has. It'll keep people from going abroad and getting a paycheck and still won't give them a paycheck in the meantime.
Right.
It's kind of a credit to United that they were able to force the league into giving
really
De Rosario some value.
One, I know that the league has said in the past that it doesn't view people like Shalry Joseph and people like that as DPs, and I feel like Dero might fit into a similar category in the league's mind. So, again, it's great that they were able to kind of push the league aside, perhaps, and get this done.
Absolutely, yeah. And Shalry Joseph actually got a DP deal this offseason
as well.
He absolutely deserved it. He's been kind of the motor.
Yeah.
He's played every position for Stevie Nichols' Revs, and we'll see if the new coach up there...
Jay Heaps.
Who I hate. I know. I was just going to let you say it. I wanted to hear the vitriol. We'll see if he can use Joseph and Failhaber up there in a non-idiotic way.
He probably can't.
But he probably can't. One last point on our offseason, and it's hard not to get unreasonably excited that we have Perry Kitchen and Bill Hamid back in camp. We're recording this before the last game of the Carolina Challenge Cup against Columbus, so we haven't actually seen them play with the rest of the team just yet, but we'll see that tonight. And in the meantime, Hamid had a killer game for the Nats, for the U23s against Mexico. Perry Kitchen played the full 90 at center back, strangely enough. Martin, again, on a scale of 1 to 80 bazillion, where do you stand on these two?
Probably around 79 bazillion. I think Hamid is really going to come into his own this year. He showed, you know, plenty of potential last year, and I think this, you know, he's got a lot of motivation here. He wants to go to Europe, and it's going to be hard to stop him with that guy, with his charisma and his confidence. I could see him really having a great year, and Kitchen's only going to get better too. So I think moving him into the midfield is going to be a good move, especially since we have more defenders behind him now. You know, the passing that he was able to do towards the end of last year, just the awareness on the field, was really impressive. So I think that's going to be quite an upgrade for United.
Absolutely. And if there's one thing I really remember about Perry Kitchen and his limited forays in midfield last year, was the Ajax game. Yeah. When he played there, and he just was everywhere on the field, mm-hmm. breaking up plays and starting the attack. And he passed forward, which is something we didn't get much from Clyde Sims. And I'm one of the biggest Clyde Sims fans you're ever going to meet. I love the guy, and I love what he does on the field. Kitchen gives us more bite and more forward impetus than I think Sims does, and it's remarkable.
Yeah, it's very important. Kitchen's more calm with the ball. Sims always, when he had the ball, it was like, I got to get rid of this thing. And that was probably the one knock I would have on his game. And when Kitchen gets the ball, he's not going to do anything spectacular with it, but it's always, I've got it, it's okay, I'm going to move it forward very efficiently, usually one and two touch, and we're not looking at a back pass where the whole attack stagnates going forward. And that's vital. It's one of those, we think about defensive midfielders as underrated or undervalued. That's one of the things that they do that gets kind of ignored, is what they do with the ball. Even though they're not going to create goals or great assists, they still have to do something good with the ball. You're in the midfield, mm-hmm. you still have to help.
Absolutely. And I think that about wraps it up for our first segment here. We're gonna say goodbye to Martin, and when we come back, we're going to talk about Perry Kitchen's role as the metronome in midfield and some other things in Jason's brand new tactics series. Martin, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, have a show. Good show, guys. I'm going to chug the rest of this beer, and I'll catch you later.
All right. We will be right back here at Filibuster, the Black and Red United podcast. Welcome back to Filibuster, the Black and Red United podcast. We're here at my lovely house in Truxton Circle, D.C. We got Jason Anderson next to me.
How's it going, everybody?
And, of course, on the line is Ben Bromley.
Hey, everybody.
So this is our second ever segment on the show. I'm still geeking out a little
bit
about the fact that we actually have a podcast and are actively recording it at this very moment. And this second segment is going to be something I really don't get to hear much on podcasts. I listen to a lot of podcasts about soccer, checking on United Mania, of course, Blessed Brooklynite and Harlem Night, listen to their podcast, and the League podcasts, and Around the League on CSRN, which you've been a guest on before,
yeah,
Jason.
One
thing they don't really do is get in-depth into tactics. There's nothing like a zonal marking, the blog for soccer. So I figure United fans are savvy. They're in Washington, D.C., the best educated metropolitan area in the country. The people want in-depth knowledge. They want to have their brains opened up and smarts thrown in. The little dash of sarcasm every now and again.
Yeah.
And I figure what man better than to take on that task than Chest Rockwell himself, Jason Anderson. So I'm going to throw the mic over to you and let you take the lead on this.
All right. For this segment, at least, we're going to look at how things are supposed to work as like a best-case scenario for United. Let's assume that everything goes wonderfully all year long and, you know, we win 5-0 every week and champagne falls from the heavens. This is how it will look if that all falls into place. Obviously, this is a team more built to score goals than to defend, so I'm going to start in the attacking end. Last year, we were very... Once we started to succeed, we still became a pretty counter-attacking team. And that was kind of necessary, especially before Dero came in. We didn't really have that extra skillful player in the center of midfield. So we were looking at, well, we've got two speedy wingers, we've got a speedy striker in Charlie Davies. We're going to get in behind, we're going to go over the top and chase balls down and hope for the best. And that was effective, and when you've got to make do with what you've got. And with that team, that was the thing to do. But it's not what Ben Olsen wants, he has said over and over again that he wants our United of 2012 to look like the United of the dynasty years that outpossessed teams, imposed their will on them, made them look a little silly, and ended up walking off 3-0. Everyone's very happy. So with a transition to a position, possession-based approach, the big keys for me, at least, there are three players that are crucial. Boskovic, Andy Nahar, and Diro. But beyond them, you can kind of ignore them for a second. There are some underlying roles that are really crucial. Perry Kitchen is going to be very important. Just playing simple, and I touched on it in the earlier segment, that he likes to get the ball, one or two touch, move it along sideways or forward rather than sideways or backward.
I think the best analog to this, in the Eastern Conference anyway, is probably the way, at least I'm envisioning his role, is Timo Tainio. When he's on his game up in New York, he's their metronome. He drives them. He plays kind of... Kyle Beckerman does the same thing at RSL. And I think that's what Perry Kitchen should aspire to, and that's the kind of style he should go for as far as keep the ball moving side to side and forward, mm-hmm. and just keep... find somebody in open space, play like Xavi, and always run more than anyone else. Find the open space, be an outlet for your guys to, mm-hmm. to keep possession going and recycle it to the next open guy.
And if you looked at the most recent U.S. men's national team game, look at what Michael Bradley did. He was able to do very much the same thing, one-touch, two-touch passes, and I think they said that only like 3 or 4 of his passes went backwards, and he completed over 90% of them.
Right, and if Kitchen can have even close to that on a regular basis, we'll have a fantastic season from him. When I think of where his career should go, he should look to model himself after Alonso in Seattle. I know we're supposed to hate Seattle, but Alonso is pretty awesome. I'm kind of upset that we played them in the Open Cup
and we
in the
didn't
final,
get him.
And we didn't have him. We had a year to do it. We didn't do it. We should have. And Kitchen can, we can make up for that now with Kitchen. I think he'll play a similar area in the field. He's got a similar sort of no nonsense. He takes it personal, but he's not going around with an attitude trying to foul everybody. And I think Alonso's the same way, where he funnels the ball around really well. He's not going to knock into everybody just fouling for no reason. And I remember last year when Kitchen was playing right back against FC Dallas, and he was up against Breck Shea. This was in Dallas. And he completely, I mean, the game was in terrible conditions, but one of the reasons we shut them down is because Kitchen was the first right back that season to step on Breck Shea every single time he got the ball. The ball was coming to Shea, and before the ball arrived, Kitchen was already there, and Shea would get it, and the best case scenario, he would lay it back to somebody.
Yeah, and they actually moved Shea over to their right wing on that to get him away from Perry Kitchen, and he's not as effective on there because he can't cut inside onto his right foot from the right side. And so we forced Dallas. Mm. We were so good at neutralizing Breck Shea through Perry Kitchen that Dallas neutralized him by moving him out of his one really spectacular position.
Yeah. And that's the kind of thing that, even though it's a different position, it indicates that Kitchen gets the game much more than he should at this age. He's mentally far ahead of where he should be, and that's crucial. In that position, the mental side of the game is the most vital thing. So Kitchen is one vital thing for attacking possession. The other player, and Adam, you kind of touched on someone putting themselves in the position to help their teammates, Robbie Russell. Russell's not going to fly up the wing and overlap people, but he is going to come up and make himself available in a good spot over and over again so that we don't have to play the ball 15 yards back. It might be sideways or just slightly backwards, but we're not having to kill the attack and start all over again. We're not having to reset because of where he's going to position himself.
And we saw that against Chicago down in Charleston. He was really the outlet every time. For the midfield, and it was great to see. And if Woolard can pick up on even a little bit of that, it's going to help his game immensely on the left side.
Mm-hmm. If I were Ben Olsen, I would actually have Russell, or I would tell Woolard to just sort of follow Russell around, do what he does. You know, what does he eat on the weekends? What restaurants does he like? Go be like Robbie Russell at all times. If you're not married, find a woman that looks like his wife. Associate with her literally in every way. Shave
and
your head.
As an attorney, who's engaged to another attorney, I can support Daniel Willard getting involved with a lawyer.
Yeah, for sure. It's a good time for that. There's a lot of lawyers.
There's always a lot of lawyers in this town. Always.
I almost left out Emiliano Dudar. What he can do for us as far as possession is he actually can provide the long pass that sort of breaks the pattern and forces teams to not compress us. Teams are going to vertically and horizontally, they're going to play very narrow front to back. They're going to try and keep small gaps between the lines. If Dudar can play that accurate pass over the top, even without the speed, if he's playing to the right or to the left, Nahar and Pontius are going to be faster than most players they're up against. If he can play that pass, teams are going to have to respect it and step back, and that means more room to play possession, and everything falls into place from there. So I feel like Dudar, as much as I like the fact he's 6'4", that's fantastic. It's been so long since we had a center back that was just intimidating physically.
But it's his feet that excite you.
Yeah, that's much more.
I mean, that's your own personal kink. I get that.
Right. We'll, that's for a different podcast. Another issue for possession is going to be target play from our forwards. Salehi has shown the ability to come back, help the attack. We're going to be playing the feet a lot more. We're not going to do something like in Houston where they're looking for Ching to win a header and knock it down for his midfielders. We're going to need to keep the ball on the ground, play into Salehi. Santos, we can play a little more aerial than with Salehi. He's a little bigger and a little, at least to me, looks a little physically stronger. But we're still going to want to keep the ball on the ground, get the ball into their feet, and then get into a position where they have an outlet. You don't want to have, if Santos is going to play, for example, you don't want to pass him the ball and then say, also make the turn and beat your man before you have a passing option. When he gets the ball, the option already has to be there for him. So if the midfield can support him, he's going to work out well, and Salehi is going to work out well. Just getting the ball, laying it off, and then making the run. Very simple stuff. The goal against Charleston was actually not just beautiful, but it was also well-timed because it showed us how this should work. We should see us using our speed in the midfield with Nahar and Pontius, getting past defenders. We should be looking for combination play in the center. We have numerous players that can do that very quickly. And then you're in behind, and now you just need a good ball. And that's why it was so easy for Salehi. I mean, anyone listening to this could have scored that goal. If you can catch up to the play, the ball's going to fall on you. You're going to score.
I do know one person who wouldn't have scored that, though. Martin.
Martin
would have missed.
Terrible finisher.
He's just awful.
Like the Joseph Ngwenya.
He's the Joseph Ngwenya of Black and Red United.
I'm sorry, Martin.
Only in front of the goal, though. Yeah. Anywhere else, he's fine.
Yeah.
It's just
yeah.
in front of the goal. He gets his heart in his throat. He thinks too much about the fundamentals, and he botches it. It happens. It happens to the best of us. Martin's a walking case of the yips.
That's excellent, by the way. We will do some counterattacking. I know I just sort of discounted it before. It's a part of the game, especially in the modern game. Everything moves faster. Players are fitter. It is a good way to attack opponents. But because we don't have that much speed up the middle, Boskovic hasn't looked... He's looked of average speed. He doesn't... For a central player, he's not going to blow past people. Wolf is too old for that these days. Salehi and Santos don't appear to have excellent speed. So we're going to have to hit down the wings, which means we have to look for when the opposing team's fullbacks have come a little too far forward. That's when we have to catch them napping and off guard. A lot of teams in MLS aren't good at making that adjustment where they've lost one defender and they're down to a back three. They don't shift very well. Once you get in behind that first defender that's out of position, you have the benefit of if the other back stays wide, there's going to be big gaps to penetrate. And if he comes inside, he's going to come in probably too enthusiastically, sort of like a, oh my God, everything's going to hell. You can get the switch. They're going to be all shifting one way. You can go back the other way, and it's going to be even more confusing for them.
I think that's right. And I think with Boskovic and De Rosario, we have the guys who can make those passes.
Yes.
And with Nahar, you have another guy who can make that pass.
Yeah.
But between Nahar and Pontius, you have the guys who can make those runs
right. And
get into the end line and either beat the keeper or lay it back for Deiro, Salehi, or the other one of
exactly.
Nahar and Pontius. And it'll be great. And it's exciting.
Yeah, we should score a ton of goals this year, even with a couple of injuries. I think we've got enough, at least on the wings. If we find ourselves with King starting a lot, we might have to play a little bit more like last season. Not as much, not all the way, but to a certain extent, because King doesn't push himself as far forward, and he doesn't quite have the technical ability to pick teams apart playing up that high. Going on to defensively, with time to set up, the biggest issue for us is going to be that our outside midfielders have to support our fullbacks for different reasons. For Nahar, defensive responsibility has never been an issue, but Russell is 33. You have to worry about his speed. You have to look out for that. Teams are going to attack him through speed only. Whereas on the left, it's more about, for one thing, Woolard has struggled as a left back a little bit. He's not bad, but he's definitely our weakest starter. And teams will look at our lineup and say, this is the guy we need to attack first and foremost. Pontius, meanwhile, because of the way he wants to play as a real, you know, midfielder forward, he wants to push high up. There's a big gap that often gets left behind him, and we can't have that as much this season as it was last season. Pontius has to help Woolard a little more than he did, and fortunately for us, we still have to remember, it's only his third year as a professional. He's going to get better at that. He's going to learn that, and I think, I would be reasonably certain that the coaches are working with him. They know the attacking side for Pontius is going to be fine. He knows how to score goals. He knows how to create goals. If he can start defending a little better, he's going to, I mean, we might have problems keeping him here. That's where he could go if his defensive abilities just get a little better.
Yeah, his skill on the ball, he's actually got underrated vision. Yep. He's two-footed. He's got pace.
He's got
really,
size.
He's got size, yeah.
He can muscle people off the ball.
His rookie year, he kind of showed he's got an aerial ability. He's got a nose for goal with his head. And really, the sky is the limit for this guy.
One other thing about defending, to go back, is defending on the counter. We struggled on the counter a little bit last year, partially because we wanted to score goals. I think Olsen is comfortable trying to win games 3-2 more than 1-0. That's fine. As fans, DC United has a history of scoring a lot of goals. I don't think we've ever had the best defense in MLS, statistically anyway. That's fine. We're going to give up some goals. It's life. But we have to be ready for teams to, especially if we play as well on the attack, in possession, we have to be worried about teams bunkering in and then waiting to catch us, where we've committed one too many men forward, and then they're going to break out. Especially the teams with some speed. Teams like Dallas have a lot of speed that we're going to have to worry about. Kansas City, in the opener, is a team that we can't let counter on us because they have plenty of speed all across the front line. What we need to do about that is, I like to say the word, is focus. You can't just come forward because, all right, it's 0-0, half an hour has gone by, we've been in control but we haven't scored. That doesn't mean you get to lose your discipline positionally. You have to maintain that focus on, I mean, in soccer, you can lose the ball and 3 seconds later, the guy's in behind and it's a one-on-one on your goalkeeper. You can't think that it's not going to happen because that's precisely when it happens. We can't have the gaps that we had last year. We need to communicate a little better. I know everyone's been talking about Dudar having a very loud voice. That's important. Other players, it can't just be one player being the only communicator. Everyone has to communicate more often, and they have to give better information.
And I think that's something moving Perry Kitchen from the back line up to midfield helps with, too. You watch him during the Ajax game, or the last game of the year, last year against Sporting. He's constantly waving his arms, pointing, screaming. He's like a Ben Olsen out on the field, to be honest. He's constantly yelling. I don't know how he doesn't lose his voice every game, but he's...
Tea with honey.
That'll do it. A little bit of lemon.
Yeah.
Just always is concerned with the team's shape and moving the pieces around in the midfield. And he did that to an extent on the back line, but just couldn't do it as well. He was a rookie. There's no fault.
And also, he's a right back. Out on the wing, it's a little harder to do that.
Yeah.
Coming into the middle, you can really reach every single teammate. You'll see a lot of coaches, they don't want to give the captaincy to a goalkeeper or an outside player. They want to play someone in the spine of the team as the captain. And it's not necessarily because that's the best captain, but it's because that player can communicate with everyone else. Whereas out at right back, you know, how is he going to tell Daniel Woolard without running over there? And then you've got, you know, sort of a disaster on your hands. The other issue on the break is we need to, especially the attacking midfield trio of Nahar, Boscovich, and Pontius, or Cruz and De Leon if they're in, those guys need to step forward and slow counterattacks down. We can't, if you can nip those in the bud, then we're going to get the ball back and go right back to it on the attack. If you stay too deep, they're just going to bypass you, and then you're not even in the play. So seeing the counter coming, seeing that we've lost the ball, and if the ball's on your side, you need to step forward and make that pass go where you want it to go. You're maybe not going to win the ball back, but if you can get that guy to pass backwards or sideways, there's not a counter. They just have the ball, and that's in their end. It's not that big of a deal.
The ball's always less dangerous 80 yards from goal.
Exactly. And if you can apply that pressure consistently, you're not going to have teams running in behind. But that first pass is often what determines, is this going to be a counter or is it just a possession? If that guy can look up and move the ball 20 yards forward to someone in stride, you've got a counter. If you're pressuring him and he's like, well, I've got to go back, then you're fine. And then you can set up your defense the way you want it rather than scrambling around, which is a lot. We did a lot of scrambling last year.
I think that's right.
As far as the formation, just to touch on that before we finish up, we'll probably default into a 4-4-2 diamond, but I think depending on who we're playing, depending on what the matchups are, you may see it look more like a 4-3-1-2 where our wingers are a little more narrow and a little closer to Kitchen than to Boscovich. And against other opponents, Kitchen will be the one that's at the base, and it won't be a true, you know, actual diamond. It'll be a little asymmetrical. It's not really that important. It's basically semantics. But when you play RSL, you might want to play a little more of a compressed style, the 4-3-1-2. I know Seattle likes to play with Alonso underneath the other three. Theirs is kind of different because Evans doesn't push so high up.
Right. It's, what do they call it up there? Siggy's arrow?
Yeah.
I think
yeah.
they call
it. Well, that's because Montero drops off as well.
Yeah. One thing I'm curious about, and I brought this up in a comment on the blog, is defensive formation. How are we going to line up when we don't have the ball, when the other team has a spell of sustained possession? Are we going to be two bands of four with our two forwards pressing their center backs? Are we going to be a 4-4 or 4-1-4-1 where Perry Kitchen roams between two bands of four and Dero drops into the midfield without the ball? Or are we going to be, you know, a band of four, Perry Kitchen, our three more advanced midfielders, and then our two forwards on their center backs? I think that one is honestly the most likely. And you see more teams kind of fielding that and, yeah. and being confident without the two bands of four bunker.
Right.
And how do you see us lining up like that this year?
I agree that it would be more like four and then Kitchen and then three. De Rosario and Boscovich are going to have to work on their understanding as to who deals with the, especially when we play the Beckermans or Showery Josephs of the league, the guys that play a little deeper but are still crucial to the possession that get their fair share of assists, the two of them can't let that player dictate things. We have to force him into a sideways pass or a backwards pass or loss of possession. We can't give them the easy possession that we sometimes, especially if you play two banks of four, because he's playing underneath, you're not going to have anyone there to do anything about it. So the fact that Di Rosario is underneath our front line and Boscovich is a little ahead of the midfield, they can sort of be on either side where the forwards pass isn't there, the turn into a different set of... Alonso's very good at... He'll get the ball and you'll apply pressure and he'll just make a turn into where the open space is. But if Di Rosario is coming off the front line, he can go sort of back and one way and Boscovich can come forward and the other way and... All of a sudden, you can say Alonso...
You sandwich him.
Yeah. You say, pass it back to this player, you know, your right back or left back, or if Evans makes himself available for a sideways pass, pass it to him, but you can't go anywhere else. You can't get it to Rosales. If we're talking about RSL, you can't find... well, Andy Williams is retired this year, but Grabovoi will be there. Mm-hmm. You can't find the other players that can still do something. So I think... The shape will be more like 4-1 and 3 with Di Rosario coming in underneath to help with the defensive midfielders that play possession very well. Against teams that aren't so good at that, it might be more just 4-4-4-1-3, and Di Rosario will look to stay a little higher and maybe press their fullbacks and center backs into maybe giving us the ball cheaply.
Always love to score goals that way.
Yeah. I mean, why not? I'd walk the ball into the goal, that's the best.
Absolutely. I think that's it here for our second ever segment on Filibuster, the Black and Red United podcast. When we come back, I can't believe I didn't hype this earlier. My notes were clearly lacking. It wasn't supposed to be a big secret, but it turned out to be. I hope we've had our listeners on pins and needles. When we come back, we will have Tony Lamarzi on the line, the former radio voice of DC United. So stick around. We will be right back on the Filibuster Podcast. Guys, welcome back. This is Filibuster, the Black and Red United podcast, our very first episode, and we're really excited for our first ever guest. It is the former radio voice of DC United, Tony Lamarzi. Tony, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks. It's an honor to be down in the history books as your first guest.
Well, I think we wanted to start off just asking how it is you got to be on the radio for DC United, because it's really obvious you're a fan and you love these guys as much as we do, and you live and die with every kick and every goal, at least as much, if not more, than most of us. And that comes through in your broadcast. And so how is it that you got to be on the radio?
Well, the story goes way back. When I went to undergraduate at the Georgetown University, and I had an internship when I was at Georgetown in the summer of 1997, before my senior year, so it was DC United's second year in the league, and I had an internship with HTS, which would go on to become Comcast Sportsnet. They did the games even back then with Dave Johnson, and they were doing a show that summer called Inside DC United, and I was an intern, like a production intern, working on the show there with Dave Johnson. So that's how I got my foot in the door. Dave and I hit it off. We both, you know, were big soccer people, and there weren't a lot of soccer people back at HTS in those days. So I started working with Dave, and then he had another couple opportunities doing internet soccer radio, and he brought me along to start by doing some sideline reporting. The first tournament I ever did was the CONCACAF Olympic qualifying in Hershey, Pennsylvania, and I guess it was for the 2000 Olympics. So Ben Olsen was on that team, and Chris Albright and Josh Wolf and DeMarcus Beasley and Connor Casey, all those guys were the stars of the U23 team at that time. And all those games, you know, before ESPN and Fox Soccer started doing all their soccer, those were just radio games on the internet, and I was a part of that. And then when the DC United organization started looking for English radio opportunities, you know, Dave Johnson was still with the team. He put in a good word for me, and they hired me at that time. That was back in 2003.
Oh, that's really cool.
A nice walk down memory lane.
Yeah.
I think I remember listening to some of those, the CONCACAF qualifying broadcasts. I think I remember that back when it was dial-up.
Yeah, that's right, dial-up. And there was some good, you know, I think it was amazing that year Mexico lost in the semifinal to Honduras. And both the finalists went to the tournament. So Mexico missed out on the Olympics.
Yeah.
I think they had Rafa Marquez on that team. And Torado, who was their captain recently, I don't know if he still is the Mexican captain, but a lot of great players in that tournament. And, you know, now, you know, they're all either big-time, full national league players, some of them are even past their prime.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if Marquez was blaming his teammates for missing the Olympics that year.
I mean,
I would say it's probably everybody else's fault, yeah.
Well, after eventually, I know DC United kind of stopped being on broadcast radio, and you ended up landing at DCUnited.com for a little while. How did that happen, and how was that experience working directly with the team?
It was good. I personally prefer doing the play-by-play. I mean, that's the stuff that I always love doing, and it was great. I got the feeling sometimes for Dave Johnson, he always has so many conflicts doing stuff for the Washington Wizards or for Fox Soccer Channel. So it seems like I'm sort of the vice Dave Johnson when it comes to the TV side. But when DTLA decided to stop doing the radio, they still wanted to use me. I think they, at that time, valued the skills that I had and the passion and the knowledge about the team and all that stuff. So they were, at that time, trying to sort of build up their website. So they decided to just sort of move me over from the radio side to the internet side. We did a lot of cool features and, you know, behind-the-scenes stuff with the team. We did some of the game recaps when the games weren't on TV, and we covered all of the Open Cup games at that time. So that was a lot of fun that year. That was the 2010 season. There wasn't a lot of good news to talk about at that time, of course. That was when Kurt Anoffel was the coach, and the team just had that terrible year. But, you know, I got to call some of Andy Nahara's first goals in the U.S. Open Cup, and they made it to the semifinals of that tournament. And then, of course, the end of that season was the Jaime Moreno's finale. So there were a lot of important things in the franchise that year, even if the success wasn't what DC United wanted on the field.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I have that Andy Nahar goal fried into the back of my retinas for all time. And right. And your call is somehow also fried onto my retinas.
That's actually, I actually went to that game, me and like 3,000 other people. Yeah. It was Open Cup qualifying. So I didn't get to hear Tony's call until, I guess it was probably the next day when the highlight package was cut and put together on the website. And I feel like I wish I could have actually like had you like sitting in the stands next to me, because that like that made it perfect, because the place was empty. I was sitting virtually by myself, even though I was very close to the nest. I was still kind of on an island, and I was yelling by myself. But I feel like you've got a better voice than me, and you can hit that deep note that really would have made it perfect. Not that it wasn't close enough.
Well, we were all treated to a special goal that time. So, I think it's starting to get a glimpse of what Andy Nahar could do, and it's so hard when you're a rookie to take it seriously, you know, because there are a lot of players in all leagues really that have really good rookie seasons, and then sort of when the league figures out the players, they sort of stop being such an impact player. But I think anyone who was watching Andy carefully that season was like, I think we found a keeper in this guy, and so far he has continued to be so.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of outcry, mostly from New York fans, that they felt that Tim Ream should have been Rookie of the Year instead. But I feel like part of the reason Andy won in the Rookie of the Year award that year is because there is so much more potential to be like truly great. Like he could literally in 4 years from now, 5 years from now, be at one of the top clubs in the world. Whereas I think Ream, he's at Bolton right now. I think his path to that level will be a little slower if he ever gets there. Whereas with Andy, I would actually be disappointed if 10 years from now, I'm not looking at a guy in the prime of his career playing for a really big name club. That's how much potential he has.
I agree. I think it's also, you know, Tim Ream, he had a really good season. There's no denying he's a great defender and he should be in the national team picture for a long time, but you just don't have the dynamic qualities. You know, there might be like three or four defenders in the whole world that can sort of ooh and ah people with the way they're playing. So just the nature of soccer and the value of goals, you have to be, you know, somebody like Paolo Maldini or something like that to get to get that kind of an accolade as a defender. So nothing against Tim Ream, but it's just so much easier to be impressive and dynamic when you're moving forward and taking on people and scoring great goals.
I think that's right, and that's a quality that really translates across a lot of sports. When you go to a Cavs game, Alex Ovechkin gets the puck anywhere on the ice, everyone collectively holds their breath. The same thing back in the day when Michael Jordan would get the ball on the run. And in soccer, there's so many players that can do that at that level. And Andy Nahar already has that quality about him where he gets the ball in space and you get that tingle. Right. You feel like something special is about to happen.
It's great. And even with, you know, the growth of MLS and all of the American players that are playing overseas, even still, there aren't that many players that when they have the ball, they're running at people. You're right. It makes everybody sort of stand up in the crowd because they know something's about to happen. There's only a handful of guys like that, and even fewer of them are actually American. So when you have an American, I'm not talking about Andy, of course, when American players can do it, like Donovan, Landon Donovan gets the ball, and everyone's like just expecting something great to happen. And most of the time, something great does happen. So I think that, you know, even as the Americans, you know, get more and more of a presence in Europe, which is great, I think the thing that probably is still a little bit lacking from the American player is someone who can run at people. And that's what I think we need to see more of. We need to see more of it, especially in MLS, because, you know, the defenses are not the same as the defenses that you're going to find in Europe. So I think the greatest thing that we can do in this league is just develop more American players that want to play the same kind of style that Andy Nahar does and run at people and have defenders backpedaling, because that not only is it entertaining for fans, but that's also the way you can make an impact on the international stage.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So let's go ahead and transition into your thoughts on this year's DC United team. Before we called you up, we were talking about tactically and just kind of how excited we are for this year's team and the steps they've taken in the offseason. Of course, they missed the playoffs last year and for a few years now, which is kind of a new experience to go this long without the playoffs in this town for DC United. What's your take on this year's team, Tony?
Well, I think there have been some good additions. I like bringing in a new international goal scorer. If you can score in Europe and if you can play competitively in Europe, then you're a big-time player. You know, most of the players who come into this league that people aren't really familiar with are from South America. And when you have players from sort of the strange leagues in South America, a lot of the time it's hit or miss. You could get somebody like Christian Gomez or Luciano Mira or Guillermo Barra Schelotto, or you could get somebody who's more like, you know, Gonzalo Peralta or somebody like that. And it's just really hard to know when you come from South America just because everything is very different. But when you can play competitively in Europe, you know you have a good player, and that's what DC United has in their new DP. And I think, like any real striker or real, like, goal poacher, it's going to take some help, you know? I mean, Hamdi is a goal scorer, but without service, he's not going to score that many goals. So it's great to have a good goal scorer, but you need some pieces around him. I think if Chris Pontius can stay healthy, he's a guy who can set up and get some assists. Same thing with Andy Nahar. And then the biggest question mark that should lead to optimism to me is Boskovic, because he's another guy who was playing in Europe. And even from the couple of weeks we saw him on the field, you could tell he was something special. Now, he wasn't at his best before he got injured. He's not going to be at his best right away, of course. But there are some things you can see when he plays that you can just tell he's a great player. His vision is great. He can move the ball 50 or 60 yards right on a dime. He just knows the game. You can tell by watching him. He knows what to do. He's a good player. So having a good player sort of in a creative role and another good player who can finish more than anything, and then the reigning MVP is Dwayne De Rosario, it seems like that's pretty good to have three options up top as talented as those three guys.
Yeah, I think that's a testament to how exciting this team is. Mm-hmm. Is you listed a whole bunch of pieces to be excited about, and then threw in the reigning MVP and Golden Boot leader winner right at the end. There's a little cherry on top.
I don't mean to have Dwayne be an afterthought, but when you talk about sort of the changes and the things that are going to be different this year, Boskovic would be different if he's really going to be able to play a lot more. And Salihi is another one who's something new. And then, you know, having a healthy Pontius and Nahar, we know what they can do. And De Rosario, of course, everything he ever does speaks for itself.
Absolutely. Well, Tony, I think that's almost it for us. I am going to put you on the spot one time, though, and okay, ask you where you think United's going to finish in the Eastern Conference this year.
In the Eastern Conference.
We know the top five under the new playoff system, the top five make the playoffs. Will United be in that top five, and if so, where?
I think yes, and I think fourth in the East, which is a comfortable playoff spot. Hopefully it won't come down to the final minutes of the final game. But you look at the standings, and I think Philadelphia's good, Kansas City's good, New York is pretty good. So maybe besides those teams, D.C. could be the top of the rest of the Eastern teams. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, I think that's very reasonable, and being in the playoffs would be a step up.
Would be an extra
if you guys think
game.
It's reasonable, I'll go with that. Fourth in the East.
All right. Fourth in the East. Tony, thanks for joining us, man.
Anytime, guys. Hopefully
all right.
At the All-Star break, if you want to bring me back, we can talk about how DC United is going to wrap up the season as Support Shield winners.
That would be lovely.
That would be fantastic.
I'm looking forward to it, guys. Thanks so much for having me. I'll talk to you next time.
Thanks for joining us, Tony.
All right.
All right. That's Tony Lamarzi. We will be right back on Filibuster, the Black and Red United podcast. Hey, hey, boys and girls, we are back. This is Filibuster, the Black and Red United podcast. And I actually owe one of my co-hosts an apology here. That would be Ben. Skype, I think, actually owes Ben an apology. And only the best craftsman blames his tools. apparently, when we called Tony, Ben got put on hold rather than being conferenced in. So, Ben, on behalf of Skype, I apologize.
I have other problems with Skype as well, so it's just another on the long list of problems I have with them.
All right, well, this is our last segment of our first show. Jason, how would you rate us so far? Are we doing well?
I think we're doing spectacular.
All right.
But I always agree. Think that about anything I'm doing. So
you're also two beers in.
Yes, that's true.
How's that flying dog treating you?
It's excellent. It is, I should clarify... Where's it? It's 9.2% beer. So it's not even a joke beer. It's two beers. It's legitimate two beers with this.
Yeah, for real. Ben, how's that bourbon?
It's great as always. I've got to just pour myself a little more, so we'll see how it goes.
Excellent. And of course, my rye IPA, my Sierra Nevada Ruthless Rye IPA is wonderful. I love an IPA and I love rye, so... Of course, I'm going to love this. This is our last segment. We'll generally use it to look forward to the next game a little bit. But since this is a bi-weekly podcast, we want to avoid that a little bit because a lot of people listen to it after the next game or there will be multiple games between podcasts. So we're going to avoid that a little bit. And we're barely going to mention Kansas City in this episode, which, of course, was in 1 week's time, is the season opener. Instead, we have all written one sentence on each team in the Eastern Conference, and we're going to go through those and just say, each of us giving one sentence and maybe a little explanation, exactly how each team's season is going to go. We're going to start off in the Midwest with Chicago, just because they're first alphabetically. Ben, what do you have to say about Chicago?
My sentence for Chicago is the forgotten team. I often forgot about them, and their style of play doesn't encourage me to remember.
Absolutely fair. I don't think that needs much more explanation.
Yeah. I went with, just like us last year, a good team that will tank if they lose a defender or an attacking player to injury. They've got 100 good midfielders, but Corey Gibbs has a long injury history. Oduro and Nyarko,
yeah.
If that tandem is broken up, I don't think they're going to look as good. So one injury at either end of the field. Also, Sean Johnson, his backup is Jay Nolley, who we know well.
Yeah, so too well. I have said Dom Oduro drops off a bit, but Pardo makes them go. I think Oduro's breakout year last year was very important to them, but when they got Pardo, and he kind of plays that Andrea Pirlo role deep in midfield and just kind of plays the passes in. I think he's going to be the most important player for them this year.
Mm-hmm.
So moving a little bit east and a little bit south to Columbus. Jason, what do you have to say about them?
In 2013, if you try to name all 10 playoff teams from 2012 off the top of your head, Columbus is going to be the team that you can't remember. You'll get 9 of 10 and you'll be like, who's that other team? Who's that other team? It's going to be Columbus. Not pretty. Wurzija doesn't like pretty things, but they are probably going to get into the playoffs whether we like it or not.
I actually don't have much to say about them. I just wanted to say, have you seen their away kit?
Mm. It's bad.
It's half a shirt. It looks like, you remember when Clint Dempsey's wife was in the swimsuit edition a couple years ago, and it was body paint, and they painted half a Clint Dempsey jersey on her? That's basically what the Columbus Crew jerseys look like this year.
Is that all you get out of Barbasol is half a shirt? It must not be a sponsorship.
I actually had forgotten the sponsorship. Their away kit, it just stops at the nipples,
it's
white from there down. It's black and yellow.
$35, so.
Well, it is half a shirt.
Exactly.
Ben, what do you have to say about Columbus?
For Columbus, I don't know if they'll be able to keep pushing back and pushing back the inevitable rebuilding year. They seem to keep reloading even in the face of you don't think they'll be able to, but I don't know if they'll be able to keep pushing that back this year.
Makes some sense. Mm-hmm. Moving on, way south to Houston. My sentence is forgot about Dre. Because everyone forgets about Houston when talking about powerhouse Eastern Conference teams. They always make a surprising run in the playoffs. Every year, they make a surprising run to and through the playoffs. Mm-hmm. They are, everyone forgot about Dre. And that's them again this year, I think.
Yeah, I would say my sentence is actually very similar. I say that they're the defensive midfielder of MLS teams. They're all spectacular.
Right.
They're consistent. But if you overlook them, it's your problem. If people want to say, oh, well, it's just Houston, there's nothing special there, you're probably going to lose that game.
Yeah. Or it's going to get rained out multiple times. Or maybe that's just us.
But then you do eventually lose that game. We lost every single one of those
yeah,
games.
We kept losing. That was a bad Groundhog Day of a game.
Those were sad times.
Ben.
And then I have, even though they made the MLS Cup, everybody seems to forget about them.
Yeah.
It's unanimous.
Yeah.
You know, Martin probably would disagree, though. He'd probably throw a wrench in their plans.
He would.
Yeah.
It's a good thing he's not here. Ben, what do you have to say about this year's expansion team, L'Impact Montreal? That was the worst French accent in the history of the world. You're welcome.
My sentence is more of a question, and it is, can Jesse Marsh turn his flair off the field into flair on the field?
Excellent. I went with, I'm not really impressed by, at least defensively they've done well. Their offense, I'm not really impressed, other than Davey Arnone. I went with, couldn't score in a brothel.
Yeah, that's probably about right. They're going to be depending on a central defender to lead their line.
It's very possible.
In Wenger. I'm a big fan of Uni Watch, the blog, and I think that's going to come through after my Columbus one and this one. It's my belief that it's really tough to judge expansion teams before they start playing. No one would have expected Portland to be the expansion team last year that was vying for the playoffs.
Right.
Other than Tommy Soane being involved with Vancouver, there was no reason to think that they were going to be as bad as they were. So what I said is, who cares about the games? Fix your damn jerseys. They had this wonderful history, and they actually incorporated it into their crest of Inter Milan-style vertical black and blue stripes. Why the hell didn't they do that for their jerseys this year? They went with another sky blue team. Another
That's
one.
True. They're a little lighter, at least.
Yeah.
It's not like...
They're the old Kansas City Wizards color.
Yeah,
they're that much. Blue.
Maybe
Kansas
those
City
are just leftover ones, and they just managed to
put
the fleur-de-lis on there.
Yeah, the fleur-de-lis is awesome. Great. Good job with that. But why did they not go with the vertical stripes? I don't know. I'm actually a little offended.
Maybe they didn't want to be like Chivas USA. No one wants to be like that.
That's a very good point. Let's head up to the Northeast, New England. I'm going to give Jason a little treat here, and I'll go first. I'll say Jay Heaps exceeds expectations and still finishes in last.
That's probably fair. I mean, my expectations for Heaps is that the stadium will burn down and they'll have no franchise within 3 weeks from now. So,
and they will become the
If they make it through the season, they'll have already succeeded.
They'll move down and bounce around various sites in the South and become the Dixie Wanderers.
Exactly as planned last year.
Yeah, we called this last year in the predictions threads. Ben, what do you have to say about New England?
I called them the Island of Misfit Toys. They have signed or have on trial Clyde Sims, Blake Bretschneider, Austin Deleuze now, and Lee Nguyen. They just seem to keep taking everybody's cast off and trying to make a team out of it.
I think what they're doing by taking our castaways is trying to make themselves more likable to everyone else. And they fired Stevie Nichol, which makes them more likable. Of course, they hired Jay Heaps, which makes them less so. But all in all, they have become a little bit more likable. Benny Failhaber's a very likable guy, especially when he plays guitar and sings on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like they are more likable than they've been a long time. What was your sentence, Jason?
Mine is, I feel bad for Clyde Sims. the turf in New England is notoriously bad. I personally wouldn't want to play on that, and I would be happy to play just about anywhere. I mean, it would be nice for him with Joseph and Failhaber in the center midfield, and Kellen Rau is looking pretty good.
Yeah. He's going to cut in.
But you look around the rest of the team, and it's like, this isn't
not so much.
Great. And then also Jay Heaps is telling you what to do, and I wouldn't be able to tolerate that.
Yeah. Off the field, I feel bad for Clyde Sims, too, because he used to live 4 blocks from RFK Stadium.
Yes.
He rode his bike to the stadium, and he actually got a tattoo of the D.C. flag, the 2 bars and 3 stars above it. I think he changed one of the stars to a heart and one to a soccer ball.
That's right.
Which is great. I love that. But now he has to go play in Foxborough, which is actually closer to Providence, Rhode Island, than it is to Boston.
But it's also not
close in the middle of nowhere. Yeah,
it's you can't for Sims to live 4 blocks from the stadium. He'd have to just live in the parking lot.
Yeah, it's like FedEx Field, but so much worse.
Yeah,
as far as location, it's really, really. I feel bad for Clyde Sims.
Yeah.
Moving down the East Coast, Philadelphia. Yeah, we know we skipped New York. Don't worry, we haven't forgotten them. Philadelphia. Mine is, will Peter Nowak be back in 2013? I know Tony Lamarzi said that he thinks Philadelphia is probably one of the top 3 or 4 teams in the East this year. I don't think so. I think they drop off a bit, shipping Latu, losing Mondragon. I think that they're going to drop off, and I think Peter Nowak either walks or gets fired by the end of the year, because I don't see them making the playoffs this year. They were a surprise run last year. I don't think they will be this year.
I do agree. I don't have them as a playoff team. Yeah. I look through their roster and I see a lot of good young players 2 or 3 years from now. They'll probably be very dangerous if they keep that group together. But this season, I'm not so sure.
Right. What's your sentence?
Mine is Peter Nowak crazy like a fox or just crazy?
Yeah, about the same.
Yeah. I mean, you disassemble that roster. Maybe the word is that they tried to like force Latu into accepting a sale to Bolton. Then they got rid of him when that didn't happen. That's such a crucial part of their offense. So many goals.
He was their offense.
So many assists. And now you're looking at, can Freddie Adu be week-to-week consistent? Has he ever been week-to-week consistent? That's a lot to put on him right now.
Yeah. Hey, Ben, how about you?
And my sentence is very similar. Who will score their goals after getting rid of their top goal, top assist man? I mean, who's going to step up and replace Latu?
Yeah. They might have to play like Liverpool and just depend on own goals for everything they do.
Own goal is an excellent player.
Own goal. A little shout out to Men in Blazers there. Ben, what do you have to say about Sporting Kansas City, who we filed under Sporting instead of Kansas City because it's our prerogative.
I
think the Sporks will repeat. They had a solid team last year. They kept it all mostly together, and they added Bobby Convey. And as we well know, when he wants to be, Bobby Convey can be a great player.
Jason?
I went with good, but not contender good. Like Ben, I noticed they did keep the whole gang together, more or less. Omar Bravo left. Bobby Convey came in at the same position. It's not really much of a change. But they had issues last year, not big issues that would keep them from doing well in the regular season, but playoffs, when they come around, teams are going to pick on their issues. Aurelien Collin, as much as he's fun to watch on and off the field, commits too many fouls.
He's a walking red card.
Right. Sinovich commits too many fouls. Espinosa is a goon.
Yeah, he's a walking murder rap.
It's no surprise they got knocked out by Houston, one of the best set piece teams,
and one of the
MLS.
Smartest and best coached teams in the league. I actually said kind of something similar. I think the league hasn't caught up with them yet. I said track team soccer still has the league confused, and I think when they play a team that can figure them out, that can play as a unit defensively and can maintain possession and keep them from just running at you all day, those are the games that Kansas City is going to lose.
Mm-hmm.
And you pointed out, Jason, in a blog and on the blog that's a really tough matchup early in the season when your defense hasn't come together, because those are the teams that they prey.
I would love to get them in May or June rather than
when we hit our stride.
Opener. I would love to get 6 or 7 games in to really come together and see. I think we're going to have a smart team, but I don't know for sure. And the first week it's just like if you go to a restaurant and they're opening night, there are going to be some problems.
Yeah.
And we're going to have the same. I would more confident in beating LA in LA than I am winning at RFK in the season opener.
I think that's fair. Moving up to Toronto, I say MLS's Northwestern finally makes the dance. Northwestern, of course, the only big conference basketball team never to make the NCAA tournament. They might make it this year. Who knows? But TFC feels like they've been around longer than they have, because they do have a great presence and a great brand, but they have never made the playoffs. And I think this year, with the way they came on strong at the end of last year, the way they finally kind of clicked in that Dutch system, I think they'd make it this year. I think they'll sneak in. I think they'll be in the playoff to get into the playoffs.
But they'll get in.
They'll be in fourth or fifth, but I think they will get in. Ben?
I said that they won't be the worst team in the East this year, which they haven't been able to say recently. Yeah, like you said, I mean, Joel Plata is a really good talent, and they were able to get him back, and I think they will be one of the contenders this year.
Jason? It's unanimous once again. I think it's a big if, but if Giovanni Caicedo and Miguel Acevall, those are the new center backs for them, if those two players are legitimate MLS players, they might finally have a decent team that gets into the playoffs. They're going to score goals. Danny Coverman's looks like one of the most dangerous players in the entire league. Plata is totally unpredictable. Torsten Frings has an excellent career to look back on. They've got, except I'm not going to get into the whole handball thing, because that's just going to get ugly very fast. But if you look back over their whole team, it's mostly good players. I do have one caveat. Any team that has Stefan Fry and Milos Kosic as their goalkeepers, and they don't seem to know which is the starter, I don't have to attend their practices to tell you who the starter is. It's not Kosic. It's Fry. It's very clear.
And that's the one thing their coach can't quite depend on or decide on. Right. And we are going to move from one bad goalkeeping situation, purely through the coach's decision, to the worst goalkeeping situation in MLS. And that is the Pink Cows of Harrison, New Jersey, the New York Red Bulls. Jason, what is your sentence on this group?
New year, same problems. I've been hearing a lot of people saying, you know, oh, New York's going to be dangerous, just like they said last year.
Yeah.
But I look over their team, and I still see a team that has maybe 15 good players. They don't have a proven goalkeeper anywhere in their squad.
Yeah.
They're going to have the same problems. And also, they're still coached by someone who appears to be incompetent.
He really does. Ben?
My sentence was, money can't buy happiness, or in their case, a goalkeeper. Like we said, they don't have a goalkeeper. Luke Rogers still has his visa issues. We don't know what his situation is. And besides that, what have they done over the offseason? It's the same team that had problems. They got rid of Tim Ream. I mean, they still have Rafa Márquez. I don't see what this team is doing.
Yeah, I think moving Márquez to the midfield, it was the right decision two years ago. But I don't know that he's got the motor and the endurance to be there now.
Especially with, I know Tainio's had issues throughout his career, even in Europe, where he breaks down after 20 games. Mm-hmm. He can play 20 games straight without an injury, and then he'll just break down, and it's not a contact injury or a sprain, it's a muscle.
Right.
And it's then 10 games later, he's still on the bench with a hamstring or a calf or whatever.
Exactly. They're going to have to rotate that midfield, and they won't be able to. The best game I ever saw was Márquez for New York was the game against L.A. I think it was at L.A. Márquez was playing the Busquets role, where he would, in possession, he would actually drop back between the center backs, and both their fullbacks would go forward, and they would switch to like a 3-4-3 in possession. And they just dominated L.A. It was something to see.
Well, they haven't,
but they haven't been able to do that since. Right. And I don't know if Márquez still has that ability.
I almost thought that was like a one-off tactical idea.
It was, and it was a brilliant idea that they should have built around.
They play the same way every single week in arenas that, well, Baca doesn't have any, he's never going to change his tactics,
and then he
finally did. And granted, Baca probably didn't know well enough to figure out what to do for a second act.
Yeah.
And that knocked them out.
He's like, they'll never expect me to change back to my stupid ways. Yeah, it didn't work so well. My sentence is the best team ever on paper disappoints again. And that's New York in a nutshell, essentially. Let's bring it home, boys. Last thing of our first podcast. Last little bit, that last delicious bite. You know, that last bite on the plate you save and you just want to treasure it. How is DC United going to do this year, Ben?
I said that we are going to ride an offensive explosion into the playoffs.
All right, Jason.
As a big movie buff, I had to go with, instead of there will be blood, there will be goals.
There will be goals.
I think maybe at both ends, maybe to shorten our lifespans a little bit, but yeah. I think we're definitely going to score more than we give up.
I think that's right. And if Dudar can come through and if Perry Kitchen can shield the defense, we might be in for something special. And that's where my sentence comes from. Watch out, because we're coming.
Yeah.
All right, boys and girls, this has been Filibuster, the Black and Red United podcast, inaugural edition, our debut. Special thanks, big ups to Tony Lamarzi for joining us on our debut. Thank you to Jeremiah O'Shan of Sounder at Heart, SB Nation Soccer, and the Nos Audietis podcast for giving us some good advice on launching this thing. Thank you to Ben, Martin, and Jason for being on here. And one last thanks to Gary Jackson, an old family friend of mine I've known my whole life. He passed away this week. I wouldn't have gotten into writing about sports were it not for him, and so I wouldn't be here, and there would be no Filibuster podcast without Gary Jackson. And thank you, our listeners, for joining us. This has been our first edition. We'll be back in 2 weeks with a really, really exciting episode that will be absolutely nothing like this one, other than going on for probably longer than it should. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Say goodbye, Jason.
Goodbye, Jason. But he also is clearly insane.
Why always me?
Which is fantastic, but he is clearly a problem. Like, I don't envy
nobody wants a performance artist on the team.
Right. Or if you get to keep on City for a second, Tevez, you've got other issues.
Yes, you do.
And having someone that you can just say, like, you know, I can leave this guy. I don't have to, like, have someone from the club check and see if he's at home on a Wednesday night or if he's doing cocaine at the most ridiculous club in town.
I'm pretty sure he's done monkey knife fights.
I would hope so at this point.
When he sails, like, he doesn't fly back between Argentina and England. He sails.
Right.
And on those boats, once they hit international waters, monkey knife fights.
It's time. The monkeys know, too.
They do. They're ready.
There's no illusions.
No.
Actually cook you and eat you if you didn't mark up on a set piece. And not that they have that many players to get rid of, but...
When's the last time you heard from Josh Gross? I'm just saying.
That's true. He's disappeared off the face of the earth. Probably didn't mark up on a practice game.
It's true. Possibly even, like, just a 3-on-3 scrimmage.
Yeah.
He missed a mark, and that was it.
Parked in the wrong parking space.
Actually, I think he just stabs you for that. He doesn't actually eat
you.
Oh,
okay. That's convenient, though. You still get to live, maybe.
Maybe.
If you get to the hospital.
Depending on, you know, how angry he really is and
right.
What his aim is. Martin's a walking case of the yips.
That's excellent, by the way.